Welcome to episode 28 of The Mark of a Druid. I'd like to thank all of you listeners for running up the numbers in iTunes and on Podio Books, and I'd like to send out a request. You can help me and all the other authors on podiobooks.com, whether you're listening in iTunes or you're listening on a RSS feed, you can help us by rating the books, leaving comments, and writing reviews. These reviews don't only help us, the particular author that you're reviewing, but they help the readers and the listeners to determine if this book is right for them. So I wanted to take a couple of seconds of your time to ask you to please go rate the book, leave a comment, leave a review when you're finished with the book, and I want to thank you again for joining me. Now on to our story. Chapter 42, Instinct and Malice. Samantha continued to whisper in David's ear, "Bring the page back to me. Don't leave a trace." David's body stiffened at the words that followed. Her touch on his forehead seemed to calm him. "Deeper, my love. Go deeper. And remember your queen." David watched Melmore stretch out his squat legs. His expression was grim, making the pits in his face seem even more grotesque. He clutched an ink-stained ivory guard between thumb and forefinger, poised to retreat from Murchad's white king. Even as he placed the piece, David knew the King of Leinster was about to lose yet another game of fichel to the Andri's son. Gormlaith, wary of the boasting and the board game, let her gaze roam and linger on David. With a nod of her head and a lift of her cup, he approached with a flagon of sweet wine at the ready. As he refilled the cup, he spoke in hushed tones. "I've word for you, my queen." He ducked his head, shielding the movements of his lips, then backed away and watched her face light up. After a sip of her wine, she rose, smoothed her skirts, and stood behind her brother. "Mal, may I?" She smiled sweetly. Her hand went to one of his guards, lifted it from the board, and placed it to block Murchad's king from the wind. "There. So, it takes a woman to save Leinster from defeat. Perhaps it would be better if Leinster was ruled by a queen." Murchad roared with laughter. Mal frowned up at her. The king's son laughed even louder. She turned her nose up at the pair of them with a sniff and sashayed from the hall. Mal's always angry voice echoed off the walls until she reached the courtyard. Gormlaith surveyed the grounds. David envied her composure, her regal air, and her graceful gestures. He stood out of sight near a large tree that shaded her favorite bench. Gormlaith adjusted gold-worked sleeves at her wrists, then sat, arranging her skirt with a flounce. "What say you, my pet?" she whispered. David was sure her lips had not moved. "Yardri set word to Murta." He stole a glance in both directions and rushed on. "He is to meet his father at Althlon on the morrow." The message also stated that the Great One had returned. He paused, licking dried lips. "And my queen, 'tis said that he should come and meet his sister." David watched her face turn pale, then redden. Her lips pinched shut momentarily, then curled into an evil smirk. "You will go, my lover, and you will bring me her head," she stated flatly through clenched teeth. Adam had attempted to hold a civil conversation with Alian most of the day while they walked. Her silence grated on his sensibilities. "Can you not even be the slightest bit kind?" he questioned. "Am I to be trusting you, then?" She turned to face off with him, auburn curls dancing about her pale face. The sunlight sparkled in her emerald eyes. Her anger had heightened the glow in her cheeks. "Goddess, she's beautiful," he thought. "Well, you cur, am I?" She stomped her foot indignantly. He grunted something she could not hear. Would you? If things were reversed, would you trust me? Her eyes clouded with tears. She drew a deep breath and rubbed her nose with the back of her hand. No, I don't think I would. He hung his head, coal-black hair screening his view. Perhaps trust is too much to ask for. Yet you do not know me, or I you, if all was told. How long before we reach the Audrey? She folded her hands, intertwining her fingers. Not before midday, tomorrow, or later. He could see she was working something out in her mind. Then I say to you, Adam of the Amber Eyes, you have till then to impress me with your truth. A slight grin touched her lips, but faded quickly. Adam didn't know where to start. He struggled with a desire to hold her in his arms and shelter her from all that was to come. 'Twas not my idea to take you from Wales, you know. My father bade me bring you to the Audrey. I see. Her brows furrowed, and a hint of disappointment shone in her eyes. They say we are bound by prophecy. They? She asked. Othviel had me watch you from time to time. The thought slipped out, and he regretted it at once. He watched her hackle and hurried on. Dubjila of the Standing Stones helped to arrange your capture. He could see she felt deceived, but she did not respond. He would have felt the same. I was apprenticed to the warrior clan for 4 winters. Othviel is my teacher.
I know him. Why then have we never met?
Othviel bade me not to approach you, but I have watched you many times.
Why now?
Inquisitive eyes roamed his face and found no recognition.
Why am I needed here?
Now? She asked. I'm told the time for our people draws to a close, and that we, you, are the only hope for our way of life. He did not want to plant the idea that they were to be together. She must choose him for more than prophecy. He knew enough about her to be sure that she would be forced into little and would fight what she felt unjust. 'Tis a heavy load you carry, he stated flatly. She was very quiet while he collected a bit of wood and built a fire for the evening camp. At the river's edge, she washed her face and hands. She soaked her tired feet and collected water in a bladder which Adam had given her before disappearing into the forest. When the wolf returned, 2 fat rabbits clenched in its jaws, Alian took them without hesitation. I am grateful, my wolf. She withdrew the dirk from her waistband and gutted and skinned the rabbits in short order. When Adam transformed in the forest, he carefully watched her with a sense of relief. He was her wolf, and she would trust him. But he had to wonder if she would accept him as a man, a partner. Adam had no misgivings that this woman belonged to him. She had been his since the beginning of time, and would remain so until the sun and the moon interchanged positions in the sky. Should he be direct? Show her the mark he'd received at his man-making. As he sauntered to the fireside, he worried over her rejection of him. Distracted, he did not notice the raven circling overhead in the darkening sky. Samantha counted David out of trance. His eyes fluttered open. She kneeled between his legs, his pants already unzipped. She fondled him with expert hands. She whispered what she would do for him if he succeeded in bringing the release back to her. He quivered, promising her his life. When he was spent, they left the clinic in separate cars. The raven swooped from the starlit sky and landed at Alion's feet with a... Adam assumed the bird to be his teacher in animal form, but when he saw Alion's reaction, he realized it was not so.
Orion, how did you come to be here? She cooed to the bird. I wish I could speak with him, as Aroke did. Do wolves speak with ravens? No, I'm afraid not. Black, beady eyes blinked up at his words. Othiel could speak with him. The raven is his spirit animal. The bird ruffled its feathers, making a gurgling noise. Where is Othiel? Ollion asked. He is with the Ardri. To have flown from Wales, and to have found me in this land, there must be something important, he heard her whisper. Please, Arianhud, protect Athene. Perhaps he was simply seeking you. He watched her eyes darken. Adam stretched out his right hand and stroked the bird. May I see your tattoos? Her eyes were locked on the back of his hands. As you wish. He felt a sense of relief that she had asked. Alian's palm brushed his forearm's length, pausing at his wrist. She cupped his hand in hers, fingertips grazing his palm. A shiver of excitement ran up his arm. Her thumb traced the knotted lines of the tattooed circle. She studied every symbol. Her thumb came to rest on the mark in the design's center. Her hand was warm, but shaky. When she released his, the absence of her touch was almost painful. And how is it that you have this mark? She asked. Adam stared at his hand. Upon my man-making, it was the wish of the gods that I share your burden and carry the mark of the prophecy. He let this hang in the air while he argued internally. Was it truly the gods that had chosen him? Or had it been Arthiel and the council that made that determination? He was conflicted. Orion pecked at his finger, then flew into the air, shiny blackness against a full moon. They watched Orion circle the moon's glow. A stale scent tugged at Adam's senses. Something wasn't right. He could feel it. His hand went to his sword hilt. She slid the dirk from her waistband. Stay here. Adam was on his feet, and to the forest edge, sword drawn in three strides. He slinked into the tree's shadows with Alian on his heel. I told you to stay.
Yes, I heard you.
Frustration stung him. Amber eyes followed the raven's swoop to a cluster of oak trees. Alian spoke softly. Orion shows an intruder. Orion's next dive was at a dark figure who struggled to duck and cover. Male screams merged with the raw screeches of the bird and pierced the night with an unholy sound. Adam held Ollion back from the bird's attack. Orion was all wings and talons. Clothing tore. The bird clutched bleeding flesh in its beak. As Adam inched closer, he realized he didn't know the raven's prey. The man swung a blade at the bird. It fell limp to the ground.
No!
Ollion took two steps toward the injured creature, but stopped when her gaze met the bloodied, one-eyed stare of the man. Adam thought he saw recognition in her eyes. The man, dressed in woolen garb, registered as a slave in Adam's mind. But a flash of metal drew his attention to the blade in his hand.
Drop the dirk! He bellowed, pointing the sword at the man. And you may live.
The man laughed, and then seemed to reconsider. He was so still, Adam wondered if he was even breathing. Then he saw the square brand on the man's chest, just like Perig. Adam hesitated. Alian's voice startled Adam.
Yes, Davis. Do. Drop the dirk.
The slave crouched, acting as if he would place the blade on the ground.
My queen wishes you to die, O Great One, as do I. You and your whore sister.
With a smooth, lunging motion, he threw the knife and ran. The blade sank into flesh.
Adam!
She cried out, staggering back and clutching the hilt.
David parked his car on the next block from the rear of Eve's home. He scanned the neighborhood. Lights were out. Doors were closed. A dog barked in the distance. When he entered the backyard, he checked to see if her car was in the driveway. It wasn't. At least he'd be able to search the house, he thought.
He stuck his key in the back door and opened it with a click. As the door closed, he heard a low rumble. Back to the wall, he sidestepped toward the living room. The growl was closer with each step. David stopped and reached for a light switch. He didn't want to face the demon cat in the dark. Fluorescent lights flickered blinding white in the laundry room. The cat pounced from the top of the dryer, landing on David's chest with all four paws, claws extended. Pushing his hand forward, he flung the cat to the floor. Before he could pull the door closed, the cat bolted past him. "Have it your way," David smirked as he grabbed the broom that leaned against the wall. "Here, kitty, 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 I have something for your furry ass." He moved from room to room, chasing the feline. Now every light in the house was on, and still he couldn't find the cat. He returned to the living room. There was no sign of the file folder with the release form. In his mind, his queen's voice droned, "Bring me all the tapes. There must be no evidence." His mind flashed with images of his reward. He propped the broom on the banister and knelt at the stereo cabinet. David never saw the cat perched on the top of the armoire that housed the electronics. Cosmo sank claws into David's face, neck, and back. The cat hung on as David rose to fight him off. Fangs sank into his neck. One hand clutched the cat's neck, while the other reached for the broom. He howled, flinging Cosmo away from him. The cat hit the floor on his feet, fur flying. He swatted wildly at David and growled like a wild thing. He hissed, upper lip curled, fangs exposed. The handle of the broom struck Cosmo's skull with such violence, blood splattered the walls. "Fuck you!" David stood over the twitching cat. His two-handed hold on the broom handle slackened. He spit on the cat. "Rotten fucking bastard! My face!" He pushed dingy hair from his face. His hand went to the deep scratches. He traced them the length of his face, eye to jaw. "Bastard! Die, motherfucker!" He kicked the cat. Its limp body came to rest at the base of the stairs. He unplugged the timer and took the tape from the player, stuffing them into his pockets. David seized the cat by the neck and bounced its head off the wall as he went up the stairs. He tossed the animal on Eve's bed and searched both rooms, but could not find the missing tape. He slammed the bedroom door. One by one, he extinguished the lights while he moved back to the lower level. The phone rang. His head jerked around. Eve's machine picked up. He listened to the frantic voice. "Miss McCormick, please, I need your help. This is Ryerson Sanders." There was a long silence, then a mumble. "I bloodied that man." The Welsh accent grew thicker. "I have to speak with you. It is important. I'm at the Santa Monica Sheraton, Suite 722. Please, I have to see you." David jotted down his numbers. When the machine had stopped recording, he pressed delete, then fingered his lip. He could leave no trace. That goddamn cat was the cause of all of this. Samantha's voice echoed in his head. "Burn it down to the ground if you have to. Leave nothing." He took a screwdriver from the kitchen drawer, went to the back door and jimmied the lock. After replacing the screwdriver, he went to the spare bedroom. The lighter sparked the drapes. He watched the flames crawl toward the ceiling for a moment, then fled. The appointment for the lawyer was set for first thing in the morning. Andrea held the release in her hand. "The most important thing about the project is that the data is secure." She stuffed the page into the folder. "Is everything stored at the clinic?" Eve stared into her tea. She couldn't get Ryerson's face out of her mind. "Yeah, but I have a backup on my home computer." "Do you think she could have set up James to get him off the project?" "Hell, Eve, I think this bitch is capable of anything. What else has been strange around the clinic? Really, everything's been going well. Nothing different? James has been doing all of the statistics, as usual. David is so wrapped up in his background music. Tapes. You mean like the one he gave me? I guess. Last night, before Richard was burned, he played that tape. Andrea's forehead wrinkled. She searched her memory, but couldn't quite remember what happened next. Andrea got up and went to the stereo. Eve's cell phone rang. She looked at the caller ID. It was her neighbor. Marty? She answered. Eve, thank God. Your house is on fire. Fire? Oh my God, Cosmo's in there. I'd like to take this opportunity to really quickly ask all of my listeners to please go leave a comment, rate the book, if you like what you're hearing or even if you don't like what you're hearing. Please let me know. Your comments help me and others choose what to listen to. If you want more information about myself or the book, please go to themarkofadruid.com. And until next time, take care.